Hello and welcome to Fed Talks. I'm your host, EJ. Hey, this is, I was going to say it's the last episode of the year. No, it isn't. There's two, feels like everything's wrapping up, but this is the last regular episode of the year. So that's exciting. Just going to do a little movie talk this week due to kind of a tight time schedule. I usually record and release on Tuesday night, but just as I was getting ready to record last night, the news came out that Andre Brower had died. And I did not feel like talking after that, after I saw that. Look, this year has been just a real son of a bitch for famous people dying, and maybe every year is feels like that at the end, and when you look back it's like, yeah, we lost a lot of people every year. But you know, and there've been big ones, you know, Raquel Welch and Tina Turner and Bob Barker and Pee Wee Herman and I was trying to get around to a Henry Kissinger joke, but honestly, I hope he's getting poked by little tiny pitchforks right now. You know, just so many. I mean, I was just running through a list now, and it's so many, you know, from people who are very old, like Bob Barker to, you know, Matthew Perry. It's been bad. But this year, for me, there were, and a lot of these are not even famous enough to make the year in review segments, but some actual, just straight up EJ Pantheon folks. And I've talked about most of them in past episodes. Lance Reddick and one of my favorite actors, and Kevin Conroy, the best Batman, the guy whose voice I hear when I read Batman comics. I'm sure I'm forgetting some, but obviously Keith Giffen, one of my favorite creators of all time. And Andre Brower. I love Andre Brower. Homicide, Life on the Street, was like my introduction to quality TV. I'm trying to remember. I mean, I think, boy, I've got to look. I have to look up when it aired now. Because now I'm trying to remember if it premiered before or after The Simpsons, which is really where TV. Oh, 1993. So this was well after The Simpsons started. It is hard to look back and put everything in my head, but it was my favorite. It's still one of my possible top 10 favorite shows, just of all time. It is. It's a phenomenal show, and Andre Brower as Frank Pembleton is sort of the focus of the early seasons. It's an ensemble, but he kind of runs away with it because he is so magnetic, and just his interrogation scenes are tremendous. And at the end of I think season four, he has a stroke, and the character, not Andre Brower. And the next season is about him trying to come back to work, but with diminished faculties, and he can't remember words, and he's just a few steps behind. And it is it's amazing. Just some of the best, and it is absolute bullshit that Homicide is not available to watch anywhere online, because it's. Like I say, one of my favorite shows. It's genuinely mostly a masterpiece. It maybe goes on two seasons longer than it needs to, but I'm also happy that I have two more seasons of still fairly good Homicide in addition to five brilliant seasons. But it's, you know, and it's Andre Brower just being the best to do it. It's crazy. And the fact that you can't stream it anywhere is it's one of the major breakdowns of our streaming age. I used to tweet at Hulu once a week and ask them about it, and they just ignored me. I was just thinking, if you watch the first episode of Homicide now, five of the cast members have passed away since then. Ned Beatty, John Polito, Yaphet Kotto, and this year also we lost Richard Belzer. So that, I mean, that's fully half of the cast of that first episode. And geez, man, it sucks. And Andre Bauer did other great things too. We're gonna early next year we're gonna devote an episode to his show Men of a Certain Age. Because a very good guest pitched that to me as a good show to talk about, and hell yeah. So I have been rewatching that, and he's so funny. But you guys, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. That's a good show, but his performance is just next level. His absolute deadpan as this he is so funny with his muted reactions and his refusal to be showy in any way. Captain Holt is one of the funniest characters of the last 20 years. I mean, he's just so I remember him talking about how the squad would rather be home binge watching media content, and that was the name of a feature on my old website for years. Like any binge watch you did, would run under the title binge watching media content. And it's like, that's such a fascinating performance too, because Captain Holt was gay, which, I mean, they that's an interesting thing to do on a cop show in and of itself, but then a comedy, because it puts you in this position where, you know, Andy Samberg's character is supposed to be the rebel, and he's, you know, he's not going to get along with this strict new boss. But then you also have that this strict new boss is black and gay and came up in the police department to reach the rank of captain, and has, you know, been through way worse than Andy Samberg's nonsense. And, you know, they didn't shy away from that, from how difficult it would be to be him in a modern police department. And especially the long break before the final season, when society kind of collapsed and they came back really addressing what it meant to portray cops in 2021. But it was really just an amazing piece of work. It's a funny show, and he is, God, there is no episode where he didn't make me laugh like a maniac. And also his husband was Mark Evan Jackson, who I will call a friend of the show because he follows me on Twitter and has been nice to me in the past. Has he been on the podcast? Of course not. He doesn't know this exists. I mean, he follows me on Twitter, but he probably has definitely muted me because, holy smokes, you've seen what I do. It's all nonsense. But I just wanted to give a shout out to, I mean, I would, if you asked me to name my favorite actors, he would be in the running. He'd easily top five in the running for number one. I loved him. It's very sad. And I have opened too many podcasts by talking about people whose work I really enjoy that passed away this year. Let's hope everybody I love is immortal for at least the next year, maybe longer. We'll see. And there's no good transition, but I'll want to do some movie talk. Talk about some movies I've seen the last couple weeks. Boy, I am completely blanking out. I feel like there was definitely an episode last week, right? Yeah, there was 100% an episode last week. Oh, it was the Tom Waits birthday bash. That's right. That's why I didn't do movie talk. I get it now. Okay, we figured this out. But I've seen two movies in theaters since then, both from Japan. First off is Godzilla Minus One. That title is very funny to me. And I think it's just a direct translation, and I think the implication for me is that it's technically a prequel to the original Godzilla, or at the very least is one that's set the furthest back in history, because it starts with World War II. But here's what they did. I'm sorry, I had my TV on a little too loud, and you might have heard trailers in the background. Maybe you found a new favorite movie. Who knows? It is Godzilla Minus One is like it's the Godzilla movie you want, where Godzilla looks awesome and the destruction is really devastating. But it's such a human story. It is centered on this failed kamikaze pilot and this life he manages to build for himself after coming back from the war to just public shame and the loss of his parents and just crushing loss. And he builds this new life, and then Godzilla, who he encountered in much smaller form back in the war, is suddenly back and menacing life as we know it. And it really, because there'll be long stretches when Godzilla isn't in it, and there are relationships happening. It's not, until the end of the movie, it's not just people talking about Godzilla when Godzilla's not there. It is very much like somebody had a story about this character and then said, but what if Godzilla is a subplot? It's amazing. It's one of the best movies I've seen all year, and I know that sounds crazy to say about Godzilla. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. And it kind of got me thinking, and I don't know how to... It feels like the kind of thing you just have to talk to people about. I wonder how kamikaze pilots are viewed in Japan now. I mean, yeah, obviously they don't still have them. That's not what I mean. But how do you look at that part of the past? Is it a thing where they go, yes, it's ridiculous that we ask that of people? Or is it a thing where somebody might think, it was a different time, but also, you know, the people who didn't deliver on their promise, are that was shameful. You know, I don't know. I'm kind of curious. And I suspect, since we're talking about a whole country, there's probably a wide diversity of opinions. Just start asking people how they feel about the Civil War. The other movie from the other Japanese movie I saw was The Boy and the Heron. From the new animated movie from Studio Ghibli, Hayao Miyazaki. And I don't know a lot about Miyazaki. I've seen a few of his movies. Spirited Away, I love. And I'm not real, not very conversant when it comes to Japanese animation. I don't know that much. I kind of bump up against the visual style of a lot of the popular things. It's just, I can't wrap my mind around it. I watched Evangelion for the first time this year, and that's actually a kind of a stunning piece of work, but it took me a while to vibe with it. It's the visual style is a problem for me. Less so in the case of these Miyazaki movies, which are just gorgeous. I mean, even, there are certain visual conventions that seem weird to me and is just how they portray things in Japan. Like, when somebody cries, the way their tears form and where they come from seems very weird to me. It's not like you look at it and go, that's not how tears work, but it's not how you would portray a tear in American animation, and that is... So it just seems wrong as a visual portrayal. If I were smarter, I could get through this better, but I'm not, and I'm just a dummy putting words together. But this is a, it's, I kind of don't want to say too much because, partly because it's very impressionistic. And you can take there's a story to be sure, but what the story means is really left up to you. But much like Spirited Away, it's a child who finds himself in a strange world that is alternately beautiful and dangerous. And there's a lot of it that is very much about how a kid perceives the world, but also about how an old man who is very likely nearing the end of his life views the world. And I'm not trying to be morbid, but Miyazaki is not 82 years old. And this movie took 7 years to make. So it is, he insists he's working on something else, but it, you know, let's be honest. And he has talked about how nobody in his family has lived past 80 and he's 82. You know, there's a lot to chew on. You know, some of it, as I did some research after the movie, and some of it does seem to be him thinking about his legacy and what he leaves behind, both artistically and as a family man. And I feel like atomic bomb imagery is really prevalent. There, you know, there's so the way fire is portrayed always looks like a, you know, like a dramatization of somebody being engulfed in an atomic blast. And this movie is set during World War II, so it's, you know, maybe 6 months before the bomb. And, like, that's an interpretation I couldn't shake, but Blank Check did a three-and-a-half-hour episode about it last week. And they never once even mentioned the atom bomb. So maybe that's what I'm bringing to it, or maybe this is once again proof that it is in fact a friend of the show, Haley, who is North America's most trusted culture critic, and not David Sims, who is my second most trusted movie critic. He's like 100th of TV critics. Dude didn't like this final season of Barry. Come on. So I'm still kind of mulling over what I've, but it's an incredible experience. It is so moving and heartfelt and also weird and grotesque and scary and funny. It's just so much of everything. It's really worth seeing. If you have any interest in it, it'll be worth it. I saw the dubbed version, which people get snobby over, but that's, first off, that's what was playing locally. And second, man, the dubbed version is real good. They got some, Dave Bautista is the Parakeet King, and he is in full Bautista flavor. Willem Dafoe is heartbreaking as a dying pelican. Yet Florence Pugh, Gemma Chan, who I like a lot, is in it. Christian Bale, and the standout. Oh, Mark Hamill kills it as a granduncle, but you know he's a voice guy. Of course, he's going to rock it. There is a weird little man, and I kind of don't even want to spoil what the weird little man is because his reveal is such a oh, this is a different movie than I thought moment. But he's a weird little guy who looks like he should be voiced by Danny DeVito, and his performance is very character actory. I'm listening to it. The guy, whoever's doing the voice, is nailing it and just like going big. I mean, doing a gross little guy voice who has big, creepy reactions. And then you see the credits, and it is Robert Pattinson. No, nobody saw that coming. That is a... I was stunned. There is not a trace of Pattinson in there. He is going for it. So yeah, Godzilla Minus One and The Boy and the Heron. Just both awesome experiences. I don't know how many more movies I'll see this year in theaters, but if those are the last ones, I'm going out on a high. I do want to see Ferrari, so maybe I will see that. And there's that other thing that looks good that I can't remember the name of. So look, we'll check in later as to what movies I'll be seeing. You know what? This will be a shortish episode because, boy, I'll tell you about what's coming in the future. I did, due to time crunch, I didn't get to watch a Muppets movie this week. So now I have to watch two so I could get Muppet Christmas Carol in for next week's Christmas episode. But I did watch the Jason Statham Film Festival. This time it's Chaos 2005. Starring Jason Statham, Wesley Snipes, and Ryan Philippe. I have heard it both ways. I don't know which is right. I also had to pronounce Yaphet Kotto's name, and I've heard it Yaphet Kotto and Yaphet Kotto, and I've also heard his first name as Yaphet. So I've gotten through two celebrities whose names I don't want to try pronouncing out loud. It's theoretically an action movie, though it's fairly inert. It's a police drama with Statham as Quentin Connors, a cop who was disgraced after a hostage situation went bad. But he's called back to action when Wesley Snipes and his crew take a whole bank hostage, and he's the cop they want on the scene. And Wesley Snipes claims to be the brother of the guy they gunned down for taking a hostage. It's a lot. It looks very TV movie. Like it's slow and it just looks shot for television. And I think I said inert before. There's actually a very good motorcycle versus car chase scene where like either they couldn't do reshoots or they just were surprisingly realistic about it. Like they are hitting things and the truck is dragging stuff along. Like it hits a garbage can and it's pushing a garbage can in front of it and it looks way less cool, but it's like, yeah, that's what would happen. And even the, it's weird because we've seen two Transporter movies now and they're still not really putting Statham in action scenes outside of those. He has one fight scene and he really kind of, it doesn't seem like they could afford stunts because what he's doing is kind of fighting a guy in a bathroom, but more like placing him where he needs to go. And it's pretty rough. It's got its moments. Wesley Snipes is fun to watch. Like everybody's doing their best. It's just, there's just isn't much to it. And there's a fun twist at the end. But the characters aren't well-defined or interesting enough that the reveals of who they really are could be interesting. Like you need to have a character before you can do a twist with a character. It's fine. I'm kind of glad I watched it because this is sort of the cheapy dirtbag movie I knew I was going to see a lot of, and it's, you know, it's fine. It was made for $16 million. It grossed $7 million in the U.S. That said, it was primarily, and it's much harder to track the box office there, it was basically made on the cheap to make quick money overseas. It was released in the United Arab Emirates 3 years before it came to, 2 years rather. It was released in the United Arab Emirates in 2005, at the end of 2005, and it came out direct to DVD in America in 2008. So this was clearly I think there's a lot of those Jason Statham things that play better in Europe and just sort of get a cursory release in America. And that's kind of the interesting thing about his career, is he is making these, you know, weird Eastern European hits that just flop over here. And, you know, stuff like The Meg, which is made primarily for the Chinese market and does decently over here. And then also is in, you know, he's in a huge franchise over here. He also, you know, does lead major movies. He's got like two careers running in parallel. Usually you go to the European releases when you can't really get a movie made in America, or you need to make a bunch of movies really fast, like Nicolas Cage. And he's, you know, dude's doing Hobbs and Shaw, and also, you know, the Chaos. I mean, let's be honest. It is not as exciting as you would think a European direct-to-video hit would be, but look, it sounds like they made their money back on the foreign release, so somebody knew what they were doing. It is not one I will probably rewatch unless I revisit the Jason Statham Film Festival, which one day I hope I do with a loved one. That will assure that I never have a loved one with that dangling in front of them. So, yeah, it was kind of a bummer, but it was also, I didn't have a bad time watching it. You know, Statham's still fun. Wesley Snipes is occasionally really going for it, but he seems to get tired over the course of the movie. But he does his weird thing he does sometimes where it seems like he's auditioning to play the Joker. All in all, it was, I ended up giving it 2.5 stars. It's one of the lowest on my overall rankings. It still beats The Absolute Disasters, but it's just not very memorable. It's not much of anything. I believe the next one, which we probably won't get to until January, will be, I think it might be the Steve Martin Pink Panther reboot, in which he has an uncredited role. We'll see how big that role is. But we'll catch up. I'm still excited to be doing this. I knew there were going to be some movies that didn't do much for me, but also aren't bad enough to be sort of baffling as I watch them. They just sort of exists. And that's Chaos for you. Chaos, a movie that exists. Next week, we will talk Christmas. I will have a Christmas story to read. Hopefully I have watched the Muppet Christmas Carol by then. I'm really stressing out over that. And next, the week after that, it'll come out the day after Christmas if all goes well. It's already recorded, so there's no reason it wouldn't. I say that, and who knows. It'll be the best TV shows of 2023 with the aforementioned Haley. We recorded this on Monday. It was so fun. It was so fun to just talk TV with my favorite person to talk TV with whom to talk TV if you're going to be a stickler. And we talked roughly an Avengers Endgame length of time. And we hit all the big ones, baby. It's great. It's so fun. So that'll be out in 2 weeks. I hope you enjoy it. I might take a week off after that, just for a holiday reset. And let me tell you this. Next week, Friday, I think I'm allowed to say it. If I'm not, don't tell anybody. I will be on ADHD DVD. We are celebrating Shackmas, the Shaquille O'Neal-themed extension of Christmas. I don't want to say what movie we're watching, but I am excited. I have never seen it. It feels like a big gap in my cultural knowledge. We're going to record that next week. I am so excited. That's a fun show to do. It's a fun show to listen to. I'll record it before I record my next episode, so I'll be able to to be more definitively enthusiastic next week. Anyway, that's where we stand. Sorry, this episode was sad, and then it ended on sort of a letdown of a Jason Statham movie. I wonder if there's anybody for whom Chaos is their favorite movie. Like, is every movie somebody's favorite? I don't think that's true. You know, it seems like a thing you would say about a bad movie. You go, well, every movie is somebody's favorite. No, definitely not. And I'm not just talking things that nobody has seen, like Chaos, or things that are sort of famously bad, like Geely or something. There is no human being for whom their favorite movie is Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. There is nobody for whom their favorite movie is Fast X. You know, there's nobody who would tell you their favorite movie is The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, which is a movie I like. We talked about it on Tom Waits Day. But there is no human being for whom that is their favorite movie. I don't know. Now I'm thinking about that. I wonder how many movies are nobody's favorite. Even movies people like. Now, I'm sure Avatar is somebody's favorite movie, but boy, I'm down a rabbit hole I was not ready to go down. We'll think about this more next year. Remember to check out our sponsor, teesbysummer.com. Amazing t-shirts and mugs, the water bottle. Love it all. It's great. You should buy something. You will not have it in time for Christmas at this point. But let's be honest, your Christmas shopping's done. This one's just going to be for you. Buy yourself something nice. Buy yourself a mug. You can email the show at fedtalks@yahoo.com, or I'm on Twitter at EJFedis, and at Instagram, EJ_Fedis. The Daily Daredevil is trucking along. Guys, we have turned a corner after almost 40 issues of Dan Chichester just being the worst. JMD Mateus, who co-wrote my favorite comic of all time, is on the board. And it's not his best work, but it's pretty fun, and he is playing with, like, Daredevil lore from what would have been 30 years ago at that time. And here's the thing. The best Daredevil writers at the point that I am reading have been Frank Miller and Ann Nesenti. They seem to have very little interest in the early days of Daredevil. And that's fine. Most of those were not good. Neither of them should have gone back and read every issue of Daredevil. I would advise them against it. Their time is more valuable than that. JMD Mateus clearly did. And as somebody who has also read, up to that point, every issue, it's kind of fun to see that he also noticed that, like in the Stan Lee days, Daredevil would often be wearing two or three costumes on top of one another and pretending to be a person who was pretending to be somebody else. And has sort of built that into how he sees the character. And that's the fun kind of continuity, where somebody builds on a thing, but in a way that, if you're not aware that's a thing, it's still a functional story, and not just the bad kind of continuity is somebody getting real picky about, you know, why Wonder Woman was missing a belt in an issue from 1948. Thanks, Roy Thomas, the second Daredevil writer, by the way, when we have beef. Anyway, so I'm in this period where I am having fun with Daredevil again. You know, Chichester really took me on a journey. I made judgments about him as a person. And I think they hold up, but I'm also not going to look into it, because I'll feel bad about him saying bad things about him if he turns out to be a nice man. And he probably is. I mean, who knows? But then after he left, the very next issue was written by a since-outed sexual predator, which, man, that was a bit of a bummer. And I believe, just remembering from, as we now hit the point where I was working in a comic store, I believe I have a few more issues written by a different since-outed sexual predator. But honestly, if you're a comic that's only had two sexual predators writing for you in 30 years, honestly, you're ahead of the curve. There's some real dirtbags back in the day. And now. Because these two guys were only exposed fairly recently. So at the time they were writing Daredevil, nobody knew they were creeps. That's more than I intended to talk about Daredevil, but less than I want to. That's it for me. I will talk to you next week for Christmas, and then come back for the best TV shows of 2023, and keep on trucking. Bye.